Harry Carey Sr. was one of Hollywood's first Western movie stars, best known for his roles in John Ford films. Carey died in 1947, but his son Harry continued the family tradition. He became a regular character in Ford's stock company, appearing in 9 Ford films, including Rio Grande, She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, and Wagon Master. Carey is the host of a new cable special on John Ford, premiering October 14th on the American Movie Classics channel. Carey's first Ford film was The Three Godfathers with John Wayne. I asked Harry Carey Jr. if he felt that his future with Ford was secure from then on.
After we finished The Three Godfathers, I wasn't real sure because he was really tough on me on that picture. And in fact, if it hadn't been for Duke Wayne, I kept threatening to quit after we'd finished work at night because he rode me so bad. But now when I think back on it, I don't blame him too much because I made a lot of mistakes.
What was he on your case for when you worked with him?
Most of the time it was, I think, a little timidity on my part. And also I had a terrible habit of getting covered in a scene. By that I mean getting behind something so that my face wasn't in the camera. I was not aware of the lens. Now I've overcompensated. You know, I know where it is without looking at it all the time. I can feel it. But back then, it drove him crazy because I wouldn't hit my marks and I'd be covered or there'd be a shadow on my face, and that drove him nuts. But he's had the reputation of being tough, but a lot of those old-time directors were kind of gruff and tough, you know, with young actors.
Well, they were such macho movies also.
Yeah, they were macho movies. And it's not a big secret that Ford did have a little bit of a sadistic streak, and also he had an incredible sense of humor, and he could also be very loving and warm. He's a very complex man, but I came to love him almost like, you know, like a father figure.
I grew up watching Westerns all the time, both movie Westerns and television Westerns, and I could tell you it was my ambition in life when I was young to be a cowboy. You grew up the son of a cowboy star, you know, a star of Westerns.
Yeah.
Did you want to be a cowboy when you grew up? Did you ever have those kinds of fantasies?
Yeah, well, when I was in my teens, I wanted to be a racehorse trainer. And my idol, equine idol, was Seabiscuit, who was a very famous racehorse. And much to my dad's chagrin, I mean, he wanted me to be, you know, to start roping. And he said, you don't wear your boots enough. You don't wear your cowboy hat. You're always riding around in your tennis shoes and stuff. And finally, when I was about 19, I met a great cowboy. He was a world champion. His name was Andy Waregi. He was a Spanish Basque. He's still living. He's up in Newhall. And he became my hero, and he taught me to rope. And then I got cowboy nuts, and my father was very proud of that.
What was one of the most challenging action scenes that you were in?
Well, that was in the picture called Rio Grande, with John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara and Claude Jarman Jr. and Ben Johnson and I, Victor McLaglen, and Ben Johnson and I were played a couple of cavalry guys who had just been recruited. And there's a scene where Victor wants to test our horsemanship, and he doesn't think we're probably not any good, and so there's some what they call Roman teams. That's two horses linked together, and you leap on one, and then when they start to run, you get up on stand on top of them and ride the two horses. It's called Roman riding.
This is one leg on each horse?
One foot on each horse. You're standing up. It's like water skiing on horses.
Right.
And so anyway, that was the most challenging because we had to learn that before the picture started. You just don't do that. The main reason is, even though we were in our 20s, your legs just give out. And your first instinct when you get on the horses, who are broken to do that, is to bend your knees and be in a squatted position all the time because you feel safer that way. But actually, when you get better at it, you begin to straighten up more. So your legs just give out when you first start doing it. So we did it for 3 weeks before the picture started, and I think that was the most challenging physical thing that we had to do horseback-wise.
Can you give me a sense of what it's like to be in the middle of one of those epic scenes with the cavalry versus the Indians and a lot of, you know, horses charging?
Yeah. Well, we loved it. It's sort of like, I imagine, a good athlete feels the same feeling before a baseball or a football game. It's a challenge, and the unexpected is always the best. Ford was very lucky that way. I think he got the best action of any director I've ever worked for.
Were you ever hurt?
But it was a wonderful feeling before a scene like that, because in those days they didn't have the walkie-talkie things, you know, like they have in all the war pictures now, and the ADs, the assistant directors, carry these, you know, on their belts, and they can talk. Even if they're 2 miles away from the camera, they can talk to the director. In those days, you rode out to wherever you were before the stampede or before the big cavalry charge, and you'd be like a half a mile or a quarter of a mile away from the director, and then you just have to wait until you heard a gunshot, and then when the director shot the gun off, then you started charging. It was a great feeling. It was very exhilarating.
Well, how are these things choreographed? Like, how much would you rehearse it? And how well would it actually work in the final shoot? Because it seems like it would so easily become chaos in one of the big battle scenes.
Well, Ford didn't rehearse those things. You can't when you've got that many horses and Indians and cavalry and everything involved. But he had a tremendous talent and gift for communicating with large groups of people. And even though he could be tough personally, one-on-one with actors. I mean, he picked on John Wayne a lot. He was marvelous with the extras and with the Indians and with the Navajos and all of the extra guys that they hired out on locations like up in Moab or Monument Valley, wherever. And they all got to know him like he made them feel like they were playing a very important role in the picture. And so he had them so keyed up. Like a really great football coach with a football team. He'd have them so organized and told everybody exactly what he wanted. It was all clear in all of our minds, and then you just couldn't wait to do it. And when you heard that gunshot, all hell broke loose, you know. He'd always have like 6 cameras or 5 cameras on a scene like that. You know, he just didn't rely on 1 camera. You know, he'd have them stuck all around on top of hills and everything so that he could get intercut with different things.
Say it was one of these big chaotic battle scenes. Did you know who you were supposed to be shooting or who was supposed to be shooting you?
No, and one of the things that happened, like when you, Western actors finally got, you know, you use blanks, of course, I'm sure you know, but when you get on location, you're using local kids or local guys, and they get these blank pistols and you can get hurt with it, powder burns, you know, and this big wad comes out and hits you right in the eye or in the forehead. And I've seen guys look right at you and then shoot you, you know. And Wayne would always make a big speech. He'd say, shoot in an empty space, because on the camera it doesn't look like it looks like you're aiming at somebody. But he said, don't point your guns at another person. Shoot at the empty spaces. But they never heard, you know, and you had to be careful because somebody would shoot you right in the face.
Well, wow, it sounds pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it was kind of dangerous. Because blank guns, even though they're blanks, they can be dangerous at within like 20 feet, you know.
You've been doing spaghetti westerns in Italy?
I did a couple of them, yeah.
Was that fun? They must think of you as like really authentic because you were in classic American westerns.
They treated me terrific over there. You know, I wasn't a lead like, you know, Clint was or anything. It was just, I played, they had a big star there called Terrence Hill. And I played his dad in a couple of shows. And then I did another one with Franco Nero called The Return of White Fang. It wasn't so hot, but it was a lot of fun. We made it in Austria.
I grew up seeing your name and your father's name in movie credits. And it always confused me when I was young how you got the name of Harry Carey, a Japanese form of suicide.
I know it. You know,
yeah.
It's just a coincidence because Harry's a common name, and Carey's quite common. You know, there's McDonald Carey, and there's all kinds of Careys. And in those days, I have to go back to the early days when my father was a kid. Instead of calling Henry, his name was Henry DeWitt Carey. Instead of calling them Hank, they always called him Harry, like King, you know, they Prince Harry, you know, of England. His name was Henry, but before he was king, they called him Prince Harry. And so my dad was just called Harry instead of Henry, and it wound up Harry Carey. And I've had people actually write Harikarei down, you know.
Right.
It makes me madder than hell, but I've had them do it. They say, what's your name? And then I give this, you know, person my name, and they write the Japanese suicide down. There's another Harry Carey, of course, that people always think I am, and that's the broadcaster for the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can commiserate about this sometime.
Yeah, right.
I thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure, Terry. Thank you very much.